Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to Simple Actions, group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Matt.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from an illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 4. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Ryan and Jim. Awesome. I will now read the first paragraph on page 64. And then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading.
64. Okay.
All right. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions.
Go ahead. You feel? No, you in line. You got it.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
Jim obviously doesn't know it's ladies' choice. Did I say my name yet? Okay, my name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. Let's start this for real. So I remember when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous in January of 2009. I do not remember a whole lot about the meetings that I attended. I was in a rehab facility down in Austin, Texas, and let's just say I didn't have the clearest of minds at the time. I remember exactly one meeting. It was a little bit odd. Everybody was sitting in a circle, and there was like this really intense big book thumper who like randomly stood up and like threw a big book in the middle of the room and was like, "If you don't do this, you're gonna die." And my roommate got freaked out and left the room in tears. But what I do remember about that time is that when I first got to that facility, all those people that brought those meetings into that detox or rehab, they gave everybody there a book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm a little bit crazy, and so believe it or not, I read like the entire book while I was in that rehab, and I was interested in what it had to say. because I had spent like the previous couple years of my life like trying to get my drinking under control, and it wasn't going very well. I love in the beginning of the book, in the doctor's opinion, where it talks about there are those types who do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach. And that's what I was doing. I was doing the ordinary psychological approach. And when I think about that, I think about all the things like any reasonable human being would do to quit drinking if they had a problem with drinking, right? You know, my first thought was, well, I'm just not going to drink so much. That didn't go so well. I was a person who was obsessed with having a couple. I hear a lot of people in AA, they never tried to have a couple. I tried to have a couple all the time because I did not want to quit drinking. I just didn't want all the mess in it. So I did, and that didn't go so well. And people were getting mad at me, and I might have gotten fired, quit from a job or whatever. So it became kind of apparent to me that I was not going to be one of those people that just had a couple. And so I decided that I needed to quit. And I did absolutely everything that I could think of to try to quit. I went to this therapist lady. We did this like lovely meditation together. I saw a manatee. She had no idea what it meant. She was going to get back to me on that one. I had another therapist. She told me to take a different route home. I don't think I tried that one. That one seems silly to me. I went there for some like happy pills, antidepressants, because I figured that if I was just happier, I wouldn't drink so much. And I took those pills and I continued to drink. I put post-it notes up around my house. One on the bathroom mirror and one on the door said, "Do not drink today." My husband probably thought I was crazy. I took them down in less than a day. They didn't work so well either. But mostly I was always going to quit tomorrow. That was always my big plan. That's the approach I tried. Probably tried the hardest and longest. For several years I was going to quit tomorrow. And eventually it became very obvious that it wasn't going to work. And so I used to like to watch Intervention a lot. I don't know if anybody else did that. You watch Get Drunk, Google, and watch Intervention. It's a very happily ever after story. You just like go to rehab facility and you get magically better and everything is wonderful. I actually watched it years later. It's kind of depressing. It doesn't work out so well, but somehow in my mind it was all going to be good. So that was my first thought, was go to rehab. And I went to rehab, and rehab introduced me to AA. And AA introduced me to this thing called a spiritual approach to sobriety. And they had my attention, because of all the things that I had tried, that was absolutely not one of them. And so I did, and what I was hearing a lot at the time was go to a lot of meetings, do 90 and 90. So I got out of that rehab facility, and I started to go to a lot of meetings. I'm not going to lie, 9 years into AA, I have never accomplished 90 and 90, but I did. I went to 6 meetings a week, and I took Sundays off to hang out with my family, and that's what I started to do. And I showed up in these meetings, and about 4 months in, I got drunk again, and I wasn't really sure what happened there, you know, because I had all the resources available to make a person succeed. You know, I had been to a lot of AA. I had the phone numbers of people in my phone. I really did not want to drink anymore. I mean, I had put my life back together. I was enrolled in school. I had gotten another job. The husband had come back. I mean, all really good stuff. I had the full support of my family. Life was grand. And yet there I was, drunk nonetheless. And about, I don't know, I think it was like 6 months later, I found myself back in AA talking to a sponsor and saying something like, "I'm finally willing to go to any lengths." And one of the things that lady told me to do was, if you can't sleep at night, read the big book. And I couldn't sleep at night a lot, so I read the big book at night a lot. And I remember when I got to this little paragraph that we just read, and it said, "Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which was a personal house cleaning." and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Oh my God, that's why I keep getting drunk in AA. You know, because I went to AA and I heard people talk about the steps and the God stuff, and I had a sponsor that was like, come over, you should read the big book with me. And I was like, yeah, but I gotta go do this other stuff, you know, and I never bothered with any of that. And so when I came back, I got really, really interested in things like inventory and amends and the steps. You know, and what it says here is it says, though our decision, step three, or to be a member of AA, however you want to approach that, was vital and crucial, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. So me showing up to AA, good job, we're headed in the right direction. But that's going to probably get me a temporary effect. At least that was my experience. That permanent sobriety didn't come until I dug a little bit deeper and moved forward. Thank you.
I said to thank you, maybe you think back on how it was when I first showed up here. I used to always say that the first time I came around, I got onto this thing and kept moving. And it took a number of years being sober. Talk a little closer. Well, I got these hearing aids in, so sometimes I don't know if I'm screaming or talking low. So y'all, if I'm talking too loud, somebody put a fit. You'll put a thumb up. All right, that'll work. Anyway, when I got here, I always thought that I'd been introduced, or I got to Alcoholics Anonymous first time, got sober and started working the steps and doing all the right things. That's not true. It took a number of years before it dawned on me. In 1978, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous while stationed in Kenitra, Morocco. And the reason I was is because my wife and two children were going to go back to the States early as a direct result of my drinking, and she'd went to the chaplain. And I was a power plant operator, and so meanwhile, she goes up to the chaplain, we get a call down, they says, hey, Will, they said, the chaplain's on the phone, he wants to talk to us. What's the chaplain want with me? And I hung over anyway, and I get on the phone, and I says, yes, sir. I says, what can I help you with? He says, I have your wife here in my office, and she's crying over the way that you drink and the problem you have with alcohol, and I want you to come up to my office. And I was hung over, and my comment was, sounds like she's your problem, she's in your office, and I hung up. Well, the phone rang back immediately, and he says, let me introduce myself a different way. This is Commander so-and-so, and you've got exactly 10 minutes to get up here. Now, I'm a drunk, but I'm not totally stupid. I mean, Commander, and I was first class at the time, I mean, I weighed the options, and I said, I'm on my way. And I was up here in about 10 minutes, and ultimately what happened was, is they... my wife and two children went back to the States with the thought and the idea is that if I didn't get sober, if something didn't change, we'd get a divorce and I got back to the States. And they put me in a little outpatient kind of a not an AA meeting, but it's kind of a little program there on the base in Kenitra. And so the same day that my wife and children left, I drove back down to Casablanca to catch a flight out. I drove back to the base, and I was supposed to be in one of those little meetings that night. So I did. I went to the meeting, and right after I got out of the meeting with no thought or anything, I went straight to the club. I started drinking all over again. Made no difference to me. I thought, now I can drink without any problems because she's not here. Can't tell on me anymore. And so anyway, she went back, and the next time I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous was after I got back stateside. And we decided that absence made the heart grow fonder, and she decided to give me another chance. And so I get back, and I start collecting DUIs like Christmas tree ornaments. And so after a while, even the military gets a little tired of that. And I'd made chief, and so things were looking up, partially. And then next thing I know, I've got another DUI and of this string of them that I've been getting. And I was forced into the Navy's Alcohol Rehab Center in 1982. Well, I thought, okay, I'll go in there, and I'm not giving up no information. I'll tell them what I think they need to have and get out of this DUI and that stuff, and then that's it. Well, they had a different plan for me when I got there. And they had a policy that if you were there, you had to ask your spouse to come in and go to the family program. And I told him, I says, and at that time, I was, by then, I was legally separated. I had been for about 7 months. I said, she didn't need to be here. They says, well, unless she comes in here and she gets an opportunity at least to say yes or no on her own choice, you don't get any time out of here. You'll spend the whole 6 weeks here without any kind of half day offering. So I rethought the process and I signed the sheet so she could come in. And I never will forget, this family counselor who was a woman, and also the counselor I had in treatment was a woman. And it felt like they had me in a broom closet. And the door was closed, and finally one of the counselors looked over at my wife and says, don't you believe that, have any faith that this man could change? She says, no. She says, and if you people are smart, you won't either. She says, he'll lie and he'll tell you and make it sound really smooth, but she says, oh, by the way, did he tell you about his last DUI? Well, I hadn't. And I started getting red in the face, you know, and I jumped up, I says, almost cried. I said, see, that's the whole reason. I said, I told you people not to bring her in here. I said, she's messed up my program. Well, I couldn't spell program. Well, the truth of the matter was, and that sarcastic counselor I had, she looks at me and says, welcome to the group, Jim. But that was the beginning. And what I mean by that, the greatest gift they gave me there is they began to introduce me to Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't a given whether I wanted to go or not, I had to go. And you people in these rooms began to say things in these different meetings that we went to, that even if I didn't say anything, I couldn't deny there were too many truths that were coming out of that. I didn't know if I was going to get sober, but I heard too many people that told what I had done over and over and over again. And it began to resonate. About 3 to 4 weeks in that 6-week program, something began to change. At least I was willing then to continue going to AA because, I'd get out of trouble, but also some of it made a lot of sense. The greatest gift they said is if you get out here, get a home group, get a sponsor, get someone who knows how to go through these steps, do the deal. I did that. Our family was restored, but that means we were just back together. Those first three steps were critical to lay groundwork before I ever got up to step four. There was so much uneasiness in our home because there were questions my wife wanted to ask me and she was too fearful, not because I was abusive. She just didn't want to know what the answer was. And I was grateful she didn't ask any questions because I didn't know if I could be honest enough to disclose any of this stuff. And so I just kept it to myself. But I finally got to the point, I kept hearing this. I'm not the brightest bulb in the batch, but I can certainly count. And I counted enough in those meetings when it got up to four and I read ahead. I said, whoa, I don't know about all this stuff. You know, one to three isn't too bad. I can manage that. But I heard it in these rooms again. Unless we do this, most people will not stay sober. They'll not find what they need if they don't clean house. And by that time, 8 or 9 months, I began to think, I want to do this deal. I don't know what it's going to entail, but I know I want to do it. Something in me had begun to change without me really understanding it was changing. All I was doing was going to meetings and listening and sometimes talking, sometimes not. But you folks had convinced me, and I heard some of these stories, and I said, how can these people, this has got to be truthful. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. Some of it was laughable and some of it was painful and all points in between. So at 9 months, the Navy in its infinite wisdom was going to send me to Guantanamo Bay for a few weeks because of my skill, what I was doing. I was going down to get with some ships and do some work down there. And I thought, isn't this a mess? Here I am 9 months sober. They're sending me to a drunk's capital down there. There's nothing to do but drink. So my sponsor, I had one by then, he says, it's a good opportunity, so you start writing that 4-step. And I said, I will. Well, I was nowhere finished with it by the time that was up, needless to say, but I came back and I kept forwarding on. And finally, I about three quarters of the way with through, two-thirds, three-quarters of the way with this four-step in writing, when I didn't like what I was saying. And I just closed the book on it. And I just kept rereading it. And the more I'd reread it, it just turned my stomach. I thought, no, I can't do this. And so when I got back and he says, well, where are you at with it? I told him that same thing. I said, what are you reading? I said, he stopped reading the damn thing. You're going to keep reading this and you're going to drink over this. Get on with the thing and finish it. And I did. But I'll leave it right there. That was my introduction up to getting there. To become willing out of step three, and it was because of people just like you sitting in this room tonight that had a story to tell that resonated with me, that made a difference. It wasn't someone instructing, someone teaching me, or any of the other stuff. It was about, this was life. And by then, I wanted to do the right thing for my wife and my two kids. And so that's the way my introduction into at least beginning to do it. Thanks.
All right. We're going to continue on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. I'm sorry. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with?
Alrighty. So there's a paragraph that we don't read just above that, but I really kind of want to talk about it just briefly. It says, taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to dose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly or without regret. And it says we did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. We searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. And the reason why I want to talk about it is because sometimes I think inventory gets a bad rap. Sometimes the thought process that I fall into with inventory is, oh no, this is just where we discovered what a great big giant piece of poo Ryan is. And I'm not too interested in that. I don't know what the thought life of anybody else was, but I was thinking lovely thoughts like, wow, Ryan, you are the biggest F-up on the planet, you know? And all kinds of really fun, negative things. And what I discovered about inventory is it's not about that. This is not where we discover that Ryan is a worthless human being. This is where we sit down and take a look at what's going on and say, instead of just repeating the same mistakes, you know, why are my relationships all failing? You know, why do I keep getting fired? You know, and that was a big deal for me because very much I was a girl who walked around with all the answers. And if I didn't know something, I could figure it out. Thank you very much. I've never changed the car on my oil or the oil in my car, but good Lord, if push came to shove, I will do that. You know, give me Google, whatever, I'll figure it out. But late at night, I was a girl who was very confused, you know. Why do I keep doing this, you know? How come things never seem to work out? You know, why? And writing inventory was a wonderful process for me because the reality is when I got through with that inventory, for the first time, it made sense. I was like, holy crap, that's what's going on, you know? So that's my plug for inventory. Anyhow, So, getting on with what they read here, says talk about resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Pretty powerful stuff. And then it gives us a reminder, I can't do anything about that allergy to alcohol, that once I start drinking, I'm not going to stop. And I can't do anything about that problem where even when I stop, I can't keep myself from starting again. And it tells me to work on my spiritual condition. That's the one I can do something about. And whenever I think about resentment, I'm kind of reminded of the third step prayer. And what I always found interesting about the third step prayer is that it doesn't say relieve me from the bondage of alcohol, which is kind of strange because I don't know about you guys, I like came here to quit drinking. It talks about relieve me of the bondage of self, you know? And when I think about that, resentment is one of the big things that I think about. You know, it's that voice in my head that won't turn off. It's that voice in the head, my head that robs me of life. You know, I remember one time I went out to dinner with a couple of friends and we're sitting there talking, and then next thing they know, I know they're laughing. And I have absolutely no idea why. Because I'm sitting back, lost in my own little world of anger. And I missed the good part, you know? That was even more angering, you know? And there's a certain amount of thrill for resentment for me, you know? When that initial rush hits, I love to plan out what I'm gonna say to you. I love to review all the bad things you did. I love to review how much better I am than you, you know? That's my default resentment. You know, happens with everything. I'm awesome and you're not, and this is how you're going to pay or be shown how wrong you are. That one's more fun. But anyhow, and as fun as that is, you know, at 2 a.m. it's not so much fun when I'm trying to go to sleep. 2 years later at 2 a.m., it's even less fun, you know? And so what it does is it tells us maybe to stop running them through my head. I don't know. To put all that stuff down on paper and to make a list of it. And the first three columns, it gives us a four-column inventory. That's one thing. Another thing I love about the big book. Somebody sold me on the idea early on of clear-cut directions on how to recover from alcoholism. And this is one of the sections where they give us those very clear directions. It says, okay, we're going to make three columns about your resentment. In column one, we're just going to say who we're mad at, easy enough. Why? The why, I was told that it was not my diary, but to keep it to seven words or less. And what it affects. And all I have to do is put that on paper, write it down, and I've completed the first nice little chunk of my inventory. Thank you.
I'm glad you read the paragraph above, because that was pointed out to me while I was writing it. I needed to start looking at some of those things. I didn't do everything wrong, or I wouldn't have had some of the successes I'd had over the years, or some of the other things if I was doing everything wrong. But I had to take a look at that, because I was so buried in just what I had messed up on. And now I would never be able to recover. That it was hard to, initially, it was hard to try to figure out what have I done right. Well, when I was forced to put some of those things in there too, it began to change. It wasn't a lot, but it began to change. Yeah, I had some things that I had done right. Everything I did wasn't wrong, nor did I need to be ashamed about everything that I'd done, or feel guilty about everything I'd done, or resent other people, when many of the same people that I resented had come back and done things for me that I'd forgotten about, in a good way. And so a lot of mine was, it was a spiritual piece of me. You know, I could put down on paper just like what it talks about, you know, but when the spiritual malady is overcome, that began to change after I put some of this stuff down. Because when I begin to straighten out spiritually, mentally and physically, these other things kind of seemed to get in line. They didn't have the same kind of power they'd had before, and I was able to look at it in a whole different direction. I remember going down here on the list. I tried going down just the three columns. And anyone who knows me, I'm not just a I'm kind of an emotional kind of a guy, and I kind of get charged with emotions. And when I did that, it seemed like all I was doing was just drafting a report. I wasn't doing much. It just didn't seem to help me. Now, that doesn't mean that it doesn't help other people. But at the time, you know, I needed something more to tap into where I lived internally. And this alone wasn't doing it. This almost gave me an easy way out in some ways, because I could just put it on paper, but yet not put anything else with it. And it became all that other stuff that was underground there that I had to get cleaned up and put some other word to it, just for me. And that was just this way. And my sponsor suggested I do that when I was talking to him about it. But it says, nothing is going to be helpful unless we go back through our lives and we thirst through everything. So it's not just a one and done and you hurry up and do it, but you get through there and as all of us know, sometimes folks will go back and do another house cleaning after they've been sober for a period of time because there were things they didn't remember. Things that just didn't come to mind. And after they'd had a few years of sobriety, some of these other things began to surface that they thought it was all taken care of, and in fact, it wasn't. I'll give you one case in point. 5 years sober, I was driving home from my home group, the Roosevelt Gardens group down here in Norfolk. And 5 years sobriety, I'm driving home, and on the way home, I found myself beating my hands on the dash of my car and sobbing uncontrollably. That came out of nowhere. I couldn't figure out, what am I going nuts here or what? What it was is I thought I had forgiven my father for a lot of the damage and a lot of the stuff that went on. I did it from a cosmetic kind of point. But there was still so much there that someone must have said something that night in that meeting, and I don't know what they said, but the dam burst. And after that, I was able to get on through and truly forgive like I needed to forgive to begin with. Because just the same kind of things he had done to me, I had done to him once I became an adult, to get even. But I was finally able to put it to rest. But that took 5 years being in this fellowship before that surfaced back up, and I finally could level the field and get real about what had happened and what had not happened, and then also look at what I had done. And because of that, my sponsor often said, he says, look, he says, this thing here, he says, keep in mind, he says, if you want to get sober and remain that way, this isn't something you do and just you put it away. He says, there are going to be times in your life that other things are going to come up that you think you've either resolved, or there'll be new things added that you didn't think that you would ever come across in your life. Some of that good, some of it's bad, all kinds of things. But with that stuff, the stuff about self-esteem, I'll tell you how it was. People didn't believe this for a long time. I'm pretty outgoing now, but for a long time when my wife and I dated, I would go to pick her up and she would only be able to talk in the third person until I could get my lips moving through drinking. And I'd pick her up and she said, well, how's Jim doing? I said, oh, Jim's doing okay. How's Marty doing? And we'd have that conversation until I got some liquor in me, and then you couldn't stop me. You know, he got all liquored up. You know, don't tell what I would be telling her. And people would ask me, is that true? She says, that's absolutely true. She says, without him drinking, he could not. He was just, I was frozen. And where I thought about that was this whole thing about self-esteem and fear. The fear was so overwhelming. I had to start buying into that fear. I had to do something with that. Because until I could get beyond the fear of some of these other things, and you notice on that checklist here, there's all kinds of things with fear right behind it. You know, self-esteem, fear. On sex relations, fear. Security, fear. Self-esteem again. On a job, fear. Personal relationships, self-esteem, fear. Right on down, security, fear. Personal sex relations, fear. There was always something behind it that was sort of like that shadow that would chase me. I don't know any other way to describe it. That's what it was always lying in the shadows. Just about the time I thought I was getting pretty full of myself, there'd be one of these things that would surface up and it would take me down to another level that I would have to deal with. That's what the fellowship began to teach me, because the reason that happens, I think, or it did in my case, it took that level of going deeper and deeper and deeper for some of those things to surface. But by then, I'd been sober long enough, I didn't want to lose what I had. So I became more and more willing to look at some of these things that had been underground that I didn't even acknowledge before. I could acknowledge now, and I could deal with them. I could get with my sponsor and say, man, I need to lay some stuff out here. It's going to be pretty heavy. And I would just start talking and tell him what it was. But sometimes in writing, sometimes it didn't need to be in writing. And then we'd walk through that. And on every one of those occasions, it came at different periods. And not all of them were when something terrible was going on. Some of us when there was success going on. The fear I won't be able to get any further. The fear this is it. Well, the game's not over. I'm coming up on 37 years. There's always another bend in the road that comes up when I least suspect it, but it's there. But the good thing ain't going back again. It's just like what everyone else has said who's ever done this. I want what's here. I want to keep what's here. And if that means I got to go deeper and deeper and acknowledge that and get with my sponsor and say, man, this is the real deal. Let me tell you what this is. Then and only then will I be able to stay here until they throw dirt in my face. And I say that with a joke. I'm not necessarily looking forward to throw dirt in my face, but I want to have a clean slate the best I can do by the time it's time to roll out of here. And that's what this has given me over the years as the years have progressed. Thanks.
All right, the next reading is going to be on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
I agree. No, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't have a lot to add to that. I feel like they put it perfectly, right? It gives me some instructions, go back through my life. Like Jim said, be honest and thorough. And then consider it carefully. I love what it says. To conclude that where others were wrong, were as far as most of us ever got. I don't know if that was completely as far as I got. I got to like, you're 90% wrong and I'm 10% wrong. I can do that. And just like it said, the people continued to wrong me. I continued to stay angry. I tried to get what I want. It didn't work. Fail. So that's really all I have to say. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm going to be brief on this one, too. It happened after quite a number of years of sobriety. It was embarrassing, but I did it anyway. And I look back on it, you know, and I think, well, that was not the best move to make. But I was working at a facility, and titles and that stuff doesn't mean much, but I'd moved quite a ways up in the food chain, and had a group of people sitting in there, and this one guy that he actually worked for me, and he started talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, the guy did not have a clue what it was. He was not a drunk, didn't have a clue what that meant, but he's telling everybody in that setting of what AA is. So I sat there and I thought, no, just, Jim, don't go there. These are all the people that you're responsible for. And I'm getting hotter and hotter. And I mean, I finally just leveled the playing field. And I told him in no uncertain terms, just, well, I won't go into detail, but it was not a pretty sight. And I was hot. I mean, I was really angry. And I said, this meeting is over. Well, I mean, everybody was stunned. Everybody got it walked out. I was their boss, so they left. And, I was still steaming the whole day, and I got in the car that day to drive home, and I was still angry. I thought, well, I guess I ought to call Steve. You know, that's my sponsor, so I'll give him a call. But I says, I don't care what I'd already made my decision. I didn't care what he said. I was not wrong, and I wasn't giving in on this deal. So I call him, and he said, yeah, man, what's up? And I said, man, I've had better days. I'll tell you what. He said, well, what's going on? So I just laid it on the line. I said, I was right. That was how I ended, with an exclamation point, basically. I was right. He said, well, he says, I think you were right. And I thought to myself, I knew it. Why did I call him? I knew it. He said, well, he says, I just offered one thing. I said, what's that? He says, no doubt you were right. He's been next time, he says, you might want to work on your delivery. He says, I've bloodied up many a relationship because of the delivery. Not because the message was wrong, but it was the way I delivered it. That stuck with me. And it just irritated me because I had to tell him that stuff. You know, it just, but it was true. And I did, and I went back and made those amends. But it was not until I could get through that first and realize that was true. The guy that said it was a good man and it didn't make any difference how I delivered it, it was wrong. And I had to take ownership for it. And so, you know, when we talk about having a sponsor, it's good to check in with him on occasion, not to just have it, you know, say, yeah, I got one. You ever call him? No, I don't. Oh, okay. I still call my sponsor. Usually it's not that dramatic, but for me or the other person. But yeah, this stuff is real as you move through it. It's a design for living, just like the book says. That'll take us all the way to the end of this cycle. Thank you.
All right. The next part is on page 66. It starts with, we return back to the list. We held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had powers to actually kill it. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
Alrighty. One of the ideas in this little section I love the most is this idea of how could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. And like I was talking about earlier, whatever thrill I get out of being angry, it wears off, or whatever excuses that allows me to have to justify my behavior, at some point I don't want to feel it anymore. You know, I wasn't a person waking up in the morning like, yeah, let's be angry. I was like, I just want to be happy. What's wrong? You know? And so throw everything I can at it. Here I am and I'm still stuck being angry, you know? And that's where the 2 a.m. nights get to be real fun. You know, because I couldn't make that stuff go away. I didn't know how to make that stuff go away, you know, and I was 29 and change, well, just shy of 30, we'll call it 30, when I got sober, you know, yes. And and I had this whole list of stuff that I was still angry about it, probably some of it 20 plus years old. I would say my list starts when I was 2. My dad left when I was 2. Let's start there. So I had a lot of resentments. That first inventory, only a fraction of them made it on the paper, but you gotta start somewhere. And so I did, and obviously I did not want to get over that, right? So this is what I love, is the big book doesn't leave us
in the dark. And it also brings me back to this idea of being beyond human aid. My first attempt to resolve any problem is 100% of the time human aid. How can I fix this, or how can I get you to fix it? And what I found is it fails. It fails. And so what I love that the Big Book does is it gives me a little reminder here. Hey, Ryan, you know those resentments that you clearly can't handle? We've got a solution for you. We're going to start relying on God to handle them for you, right? And it gives me some prayers to say, God, help me show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. You know, when a person offended, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. You know, and so it gives me a little reminder that I don't need to tackle this problem myself, that I need to apply some spiritual stuff to it. And the other thing that kind of hits me here is this section about, though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. I think it took me, to be quite frank, about 3 years to really have an appreciation for that. Like Jim talked about, inventory isn't necessarily a one-and-done thing. And there have been times when it has been very apparent to me that perhaps this inventory thing needs to be revisited. And there's some people in here that know me fairly well. But for those of you that don't, I'm Little Miss Perfect Pants. Thank you very much. I try very hard to do very well and not make any mistakes. And I don't think I fully, you know, what's kind of weird is like the twisted way our brains work. Because on one hand, I would have told you how screwed up and messed up I was. But then on the other hand, I'm like, I'm wonderful. I barely do anything wrong. What's the problem? And so my own sickness starts to get obscured to me. And what happened was is I was a person who got on fire for AA, like one of the annoying ones. Yeah, that was me. I took my Big Book everywhere with me. As a matter of fact, I was so used to carrying it around with me. I walked into the grocery store one time, looked down at my hand, was like, why did I bring this in here? You know, it was just a habit. You know, if you wanted to talk about or do something that had anything other than to do with then like going to a meeting or reading the Big Book, I wasn't interested. I got invited out to the movies. I'm like, can we go to Starbucks and read the Big Book? Terrible. Whatever. But anyhow, my point is that I was like obsessed with this stuff. I love this stuff. I wanted to help with this stuff. And then I started running around with a bunch of people and we thought that we were better than everybody else in AA. And I knew the Big Book better than you, and I could share better than you, you know? I wasn't crazy like you, you know? And that was fun. I did that for a couple of years. And what happens when I do that is this reality hits me is that, wow, Ryan, you are walking around like, and you are a big fat effing fake, you know? Because I still get hit with resentments. I still get hit with fears. But when I'm playing the I'm better than you game, I can't talk about it, you know? And what happens is a lot of dishonesty gets introduced into my life. I get a lot of fear built back up. I get a lot of anger back up. And I'm walking around pretending as hard as I can that I'm Little Miss Perfect Pants and I don't know what I'm doing and you don't. Thank you very much. And so I bottomed out on that after a couple of years. Self-will run riot, extreme example. I can do it for a long time. Anyhow, but at the end of that inventory, when I saw that, it really, really did hit me that they, like ourselves, are, what is it, that I'm one of the sick ones too, you know? All the things that I walk around judging other people for, I'm guilty of. And it really introduced a measure of humility in my life. I'm not gonna lie, if I get angry, I'll default, and then that's always my default. But I believe that AA brings us higher levels of consciousness, and I'm more aware of it, and I can pause and start to put some of these things into play. So, yeah, that's my spiel about that.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm sort of on this thing this evening is looking at as how this is applied in my life as the years have moved on and being sober and that's kind of where it's, because I've done this before in different kind of panels and things, but I find myself tonight more than most thinking about what have been some of these things along the way that all of a sudden haven't turned out. Or, and I'll give you an example. It was, without going into a lot of detail, a lot of people in here may know that we lost our granddaughter, Sarah, when she was 18 years old, and she passed just this past year from brain cancer on Thanksgiving Day. And now I've had a lot of bouts with this, but when she was first diagnosed, it literally took the wind out of me and my bride. I mean, we were just stunned. I mean, stunned isn't even the right word. And I remember that day that my wife and I went to two different places. She stayed downstairs, I went upstairs, but we both agreed we needed some time by ourselves, just totally alone. Not with each other, just be totally alone. And so I remember going up there and sitting in a room upstairs, and I not only was emotionally out of control, I literally was. It hit in my head, but it hadn't gone anywhere else. But I was so angry. I began to question this whole idea of a faith. I said, what kind of God are you? Who would do this to an innocent child? And then as I kept going with that in my head and in my heart, I kept thinking, Jim, have you bought into something all these years that's really non-existent? That's where it went. For the next several days, I didn't pray. I was just locked in that, really questioning internally. And it took me a while before I ever called my sponsor about that. And when I finally did call him, he didn't know about it yet, and I told him what had happened. I said, but let me ask you this, Steve, before we go any further with this. Did you ever get angry with God? He's more than once. I said, well, that's where I'm at right now. I said, it's rattled my faith and the belief in a higher power. I said, I'm really questioning it right now. And he just kind of, he didn't say, oh, you know, don't do that or this or that. He didn't do any of that. He just said, look, brother, you've taken some pretty heavy hits over the years and have come out of it. He said, you'll get through this. I don't know when it will be, but he says, you'll get through it. But I remember this is one of the things he suggested I read a book. And it wasn't AA literature, but it was this book. But the one line I remember, I read the book. It was a heavy read. I don't remember anything but this one thing. It says, it's whenever you're in the darkness and you're wandering and you can't find any light at all, then and only then do you surrender to the fact that's when God is closest to you. And once you surrender, the light slowly begins to come back in. And that was my experience with that. Didn't change the situation one bit, but it helped me to walk through and to continue and to slowly get the faith I'd had and belief I had restored. But that didn't come overnight. And what I had to hold on to then is what I've told guys I sponsor. Even when it doesn't feel good, keep doing the mechanics. Talk with your sponsor, get to your home group, read that big book, pray, even if you don't believe a thing you're saying, keep doing the mechanics, and it'll come back to you. But just don't waver and don't pick up that drink. Because this isn't about just we're getting sober. This is about for the long haul. And there's many people in here who have been traveling this road a number of years. It's not a one and done kind of thing. It goes back to that thing again, I believe, is it's our design for living. That's why we're here. Thanks.
Thank you. One last reading on page 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
All right. We've been talking a lot, so I'm going to try to be quick. I'm going to be fairly quick. So this is just some of the mechanics for me for my fourth column. I mean, I literally turned it into questions. Where was I selfish? Write the answer. Where was I dishonest? Write the answer. Where was I self-seeking? Write the answer. Where was I frightened? Write the answer. One thing I want to say is that though a situation had not been entirely fault, we try to disregard the other person involved entirely. And I will say this, there are situations out there that were not all my fault. And when I first started writing inventory, I tried to make everything my fault. I thought that that's what we did in the inventory. It's all you, Ryan. And that's actually dishonest. Took me a while to figure that out. But the reality is that later on I kind of figured out that that's not what we're talking about in inventory. Other people do wrong. For the purposes of inventory, what we're going to do is we're going to disregard what they did wrong. We're going to pretend like they're like this lily white person who's never done anything wrong. At least that's what I do. We're going to suspend reality. They're perfect. And just take a look at my behavior towards them and list those things, you know. So those are some of the things that have helped me with the fourth column. And then I want to do one more thing, and I'll keep it quick too. But the reason I want to look at this one little section too is because for a while I wrote inventory, and I'm not going to lie, all the resentments that I listed didn't disappear, you know. I saw my divorce papers at 90 days sober. There was a lot of anger towards that. There was family issues that I continued to have, even some of them to this day, to be quite frank. And I thought that, oh my God, these resentments are supposed to just disappear. What's going on? I must have done it wrong. And sometimes the way people talk, it's like, oh, I got a resentment, and then I talk to my sponsor, and they're like magically ever after. And I'm like, what the heck? It's been 2 years, and this is still cropping up on me. But when I find kind of my ticket on page 70 of the big book, and it talks after doing this whole inventory process, it says, we have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. And that's what happened to me with inventory. You know, I could go on, is I began to get a new perspective and to start to find freedom from them. Thank you.
I am going to keep this short. I'm going to read just something here on 71, which is near the end, about what is the value. It says, we hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And again, keeping in mind, you have made a good beginning. Didn't say an ending, it said a good beginning. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. All right, the seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but their intergroup, central office, local office services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, you may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety we would like to welcome?
My name is Mike, I'm not a
colleague.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tony.
My name is Stephanie, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Stephanie. Thank you. there's literature available on the table over there. Come see me or any hunger member after the meeting. Sponsorship is in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website at simpleactions.net. Once again, can we thank the panel here, Ryan and Jim? After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is down Colonial, right before the train tracks. Come ask one of us if you'd like directions there. Anyone like to volunteer read the last paragraphs, page 164? What kind of book?
I'm Johnny, I'm our caller.
Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Johnny.
A book is meant to be suggested only. You realize we know only little. God is the constant story of you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if everyone else is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you want to be in God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in fellowship with the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge to the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. Close the fellowship.
Great job there.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. It's amazing. You come a long way from that first time I ever met you. Good Lord, girl. I couldn't believe that. Those things are coming out of this. Man, she's amazing.
Some mechanics, right?
This circle is unbroken.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power,